This is Chapter 8, The Skeletal System. The skeletal system consists of bones, joints, cartilage, and ligaments that are associated with joints. Page 113, figure 8.1 shows a skeleton, and the white part of the skeleton, or the tan part, is going to be an appendicular skeleton, and the pink part is the axial skeleton. So like the humerus and the ulna are part of the appendicular skeleton, where the cranium and mandible are going to be part of an axial skeleton. This will be referred to and defined later on page 118. Bones can be classified as long bones, short bones, flat bones, and irregular bones. Figure 8.2 on page 114 gives an example of what these look like. Bone is called osseous tissue, and the process of forming these bones is called ossification. Compact bone is going to be dense, hard bone that's found in the shafts of long bones and outer surfaces of other bones. And spongy bone is found at the ends of long bones and in the center of other bones. The microscopic unit of compact bone is the osteon, or the Haversian system. Haversian systems are mature osteocytes that are arranged in concentric circles around large blood vessels. And each system looks like a long cylinder. And there's a picture of one on figure 8.3 on page 115. When we're talking about long bones, you have the diaphysis, and that is the long shaft of the bone. The epiphysis, and that is the enlarged ends of the long bone. And then you have the band of cartilage is called the epiphyseal disc, or the growth plate. And that's where longitudinal bone growth occurs. The medullary cavity is the hollow center of the diaphysis, and the periosteum is the tough fibrous connective tissue membrane that covers the outside of the diaphysis. Articular cartilage is found on the outer surface of the epiphysis. To see where the epiphysis and diaphysis are on the long bone, look at figure 8.3 on page 115 on A. Remember, we said ossification is bone formation, and this begins in the late embryonic period when it starts forming fibrous connective tissue and hyaline cartilage that is shaped like a mini skeleton, as shown in figure 8.4 on page 116. When we're talking about growing bones, longitudinal bone growth occurs at the epiphyseal disc, and it's sensitive. This disc is sensitive to the effects of certain hormones like growth hormone and sex hormones. The growth hormone stimulates growth at the epiphyseal disc, and that's going to make the child taller, where the sex hormones like estrogen and testosterone are going to cause that disc to fuse, which inhibits further longitudinal growth. If there's an oversecretion of growth hormone, then gigantism occurs. If there is an undersecretion of growth hormone, then dwarfism is going to develop. After the longitudinal growth is over, the bones still are continuously being reshaped, and they increase in thickness and width. Bone remodeling is going to be accomplished by the combined actions of osteoblasts and osteoclasts. Osteoblasts are bone-forming cells, whereas osteoclasts are bone-destroying cells. Figure 8.5 on page 117 shows a picture of bone remodeling, and osteoclastic activity is like sculpting. Osteoclasts break down bone matrix, and it's called bone resorption. Bone resorption moves calcium from the bone to the blood. And in this way, the bone resorption plays a crucial role in regulating the blood calcium levels. There are different bumps and grooves in bones, and table 8.1 on page 118 shows different kinds of bone markings and their definition. When we're looking at broken bones, there are different kinds of fractures, and a compound fracture is a broken bone that has also pierced the skin, like an open fracture. Infection is a big concern with the compound fracture. Also on page 119, figure 8.6, these are showing the different types of fractures that I'm talking about. A green stick fracture is an incomplete break in the bone and usually occurs in children. It's called a green stick fracture because if you were going to bend a branch of a young tree, that branch would not snap and it would not break apart completely. It would instead bend and perhaps break incompletely. A spiral fracture is when the line of the fracture extends in a spiral direction along the diaphysis. A comminuted fracture is when there are more than two bone fragments, and the small fragments seem to be floating. And those are just some of the fractures. There's many different kinds. Now, in the beginning, we were talking about axial and appendicular skeletons. The axial skeleton is going to include the bones of the cranium, face, middle ear bones, and the hyoid bone, the vertebral column, and the bony thorax. And the appendicular skeleton is including the bones of the pelvic girdle, upper extremities, so the arms, forearms, wrist, palms, and fingers, and lower extremities that contain the thighs, legs, ankles, instep, and toes. Table 8.2, found on page 120, is going to name the 206 bones that are of the skeleton. When we're talking about the axial skeleton, we've got the cranium, and the cranium consists of the frontal bone, parietal bones, temporal bones, occipital bone, sphenoid bone, and ethmoid bone. There's a picture of these bones of the skull, figure 8.7 on page 121. Now, when we're looking at the facial bones, we have the mandible, which is the lower jawbone, and it carries the lower teeth. Then you have the maxilla. The maxilla carries the upper teeth. The palatine process forms the anterior portion of the hard palate, which is the roof of the mouth. Then we have the palliative bones, and those bones form the posterior part of the hard palate and the floor of the nasal cavity. Zygomatic bones are your cheekbones, and there are other facial bones. Sinuses are air-filled cavities that are found in several areas of the skull, and they help to lessen the weight of the skull and modulate the sound of the voice. The adult skull bones are held together by a unique type of joint that's called a suture. There's no significant movement that occurs between cranial bones. And now infant skulls have fontanelles, and they have unfused sutures. And the fontanelles mean little fountains, and they are the one reason why infant skull bones are more movable than those of the adult skull. There is a picture of these fontanelles, figure 8.9, found on page 123. The hyoid bone is found in the upper neck. It anchors the tongue, and it's associated with swallowing. And each ear contains three small bones that are called ossicles, and this will be discussed further in chapter 13. In the vertebral column, vertebral column is split up into cervical vertebrae, thoracic vertebrae, and lumbar vertebrae. There are seven cervical vertebrae, C1 to C7. The large vertebrae is C7, where the large bump is, and it's called the vertebra prominens. Then you have 12 thoracic vertebrae, T1 to T12, that are in the chest region, and five lumbar vertebrae that are located in the lower back region. The base of the spine is called the sacred area or the sacrum, and the tailbone is called the coccyx. There is a picture of this on page 124, figure 8.10. The first cervical vertebrae is called C1, and it's called the atlas, and this supports the skull and allows you to nod yes. And the second cervical vertebrae, C2, is called the axis, and this allows you to rotate your head from side to side while you say no. The bodies of the vertebrae are padded and separated by cartilaginous discs, and these intervertebral discs act as shock absorbers. They also act as spacers between the vertebrae, and they allow the peripheral nerves to connect to the spinal cord without being squashed. When you look at the vertebral column from the side, it has four normal curvatures, and they are the cervical, thoracic, lumbar, and sacral curves. Whereas the curvature of the fetal spine is a single C-shaped curvature, and its shape reflects the curled up position of the fetus during the 9 months in utero. Scoliosis is going to refer to a lateral curvature that's usually involving the thoracic vertebrae. And if it's severe, it can compress abdominal organs. Kyphosis is an exaggerated thoracic curvature, and lordosis is an exaggerated lumbar curvature. Sometimes the lordosis is called swayback. Figure 8.12 on page 126 shows pictures of these abnormal curvatures. And the thoracic cage contains the sternum, which is the breastbone, and 12 pairs of ribs. And there are different lines and angles, like the mid-sternal line, mid-clavicular lines for right and left, costal margins and costal angle, and the angle of Louis at the sternomanubrial joint. These pictures are on page 127, figure 8.13. And the appendicular skeleton is going to first start with the shoulder girdle, that's also called the pectoral girdle. The clavicle is the collarbone, and the scapula is also called the shoulder blade or the wing bone. In the upper limbs, we have the humerus, which is the arm bone, and then we have the radius, and that's one of two bones of the forearm. And the ulna is the longer of the two bones of the forearm. Look at figure 8.14 on page 129 with the ulna and radius bones. When the thumb is up and the palm is up with supination, the bones are parallel, but when the palm is down in pronation, they are crossed. The hand bone is composed of the wrist, palm, and fingers, and the finger bones are called phalanges, and the thumb is called the pollex. And we see again in figure 8.14 in the hands, you have the carpals, the metacarpals, and then the phalanges that are all in the hand there. The pelvic girdle performs three functions. It bears the weight of the body, it serves as a place of attachment for the thighs, and it protects the organs that are located in the pelvic cavity, like the urinary bladder and the reproductive organs. The pelvis is formed by the pelvic girdle, sacrum, and the coccyx. So the female pelvis is broader and shallower than the male pelvis, and the male pelvis is narrow and funnel-shaped. And you can see a picture of this on figures 8.15C and D on page 131. The coxal bone is the hip bone. It has three parts, the ilium, the ischium, and the pubis. Those three bones are going to join together to form a depression that's called the acetabulum. The ilium is the largest part of the coxal bone, and the iliac crest is the outer edge of the ilium. The ilium also produces blood cells, and it's the site for a bone marrow biopsy. The ischium is the most inferior part of the coxal bone, and it contains three important structures: the ischial tuberosity, ischial spine, and lesser sciatic notch. And the pubis is a disc of cartilage that separates the pubic bones at the symphysis pubis. Looking at the lower limbs, we have the femur, which is the longest and strongest bone in the body. The head of the femur sits in the acetabulum of the coxal bone and allows the thigh to rotate at the hip joint. These pictures, again, are all on page 131, figure 8.15. And also on page 132, figure 8.16. These are going to be the bones of the hip and the lower limb, thigh, leg, and foot. The patella is the kneecap, and the tibia and fibula. The tibia is the shin bone and articulates with the distal femur at the knee. And at the distal end of the tibia is a protuberance that's called the medial malleolus, and it articulates with the talus and tarsal bone. The fibula is a long, thin bone that's positioned laterally alongside the tibia in the leg. Talking about the feet, each foot has an ankle, an instep, and five toes. Bones of the foot are going to be in figure 8.17 on page 133. The calcaneus is the heel bone, and the toes contain 14 phalanges. The great toe is called the hallux. Bunions develop in response to excessive force, and they compress and force that big toe toward the second toe. Neuromas is the shift of body weight to the balls of the feet, causing painful and debilitating nerve growths, or neuromas, between the toes. When we talk about joints or articulations, there is a branch of science that studies joints, and it's called arthrology. So when we say immovable joints, these are joints that don't move, like the sutures in the skull. Those are immovable joints. They're formed as the irregular edges of the skull bones interlock and are bound by fibrous connective tissue. And when they're fused, they look like zippers. Slightly movable joints talks about limited movement is usually achieved by bones that are connected by a cartilaginous disc, like the intervertebral discs, and during pregnancy, the symphysis pubis allows the pelvis to widen. Freely movable joints are also known as synovial joints, and most of the joints of the skeletal system are freely movable. Some of these freely movable joints would be like a ball and socket joint would be describing your shoulder. The hinge joint could be an elbow or fingers. The pivot joint is going to be your atlas and your axis. Remember for saying yes or saying no. The saddle joint is going to be your thumb. Gliding joint would be carpals. And the condyloid joint would be the temporal bone and the mandible jaw and your knuckles. The different types of joints are also in table 8.3 found on page 135. The sternomanubrial joint, which is also the breastbone, it's the landmark that's used to count ribs. And to see pictures of these different joints, figure 8.19 on page 136 will show you different joints that are named. And figure 8.20 is showing you the freely movable joints and what a saddle joint and a gliding joint and a condyloid joint mean. There are also big synovial joints like the knee joint. It's called the tibiofemoral joint. It's a hinge joint and it contains extra cushioning on the forms of pads of cartilage. The shoulder joint is called the glenohumeral joint. It indicates that the head of the humerus fits into the glenoid cavity of the scapula. And it is a ball and socket joint that permits the greatest range of motion. The elbow joint is called the humero-ulnar joint, and the hip joint is called the coxal joint, and it's a ball and socket joint formed where the head of the femur is articulating with the acetabulum. When we're talking about types of joint movements, it's going to make you think of your range of motion that you learned in your HCC class, and it's going to go through these bulleted things starting on page 137. We've got flexion, extension, plantar flexion, dorsiflexion, hyperextension, abduction, adduction, inversion, eversion, supination, pronation, and circumduction. It's showing what all of these are in figure 8.21 on page 138. Remember, dorsiflexion is bending your foot up towards the leg, like if you were going to use your foot as a doorstop is one way to try and remember it that way. Doorstop, dorsiflexion. Flexion is bending of a joint that decreases the angle between the bones. So bending the leg at the knee or the fingers. Whereas extension is straightening of a joint so that the angle between the bones increases, so straightening the leg at the knee or the fingers to open the hand. And this is the end of chapter 8. Please do not forget to read all the boxes. And again, at the end of the chapter is the box for the elderly as you age, the green box. Don't forget about the summary outline in the back, the review your knowledge with the multiple choice questions, and then the go figure. Also, make sure you are taking plenty of notes and practice in your study guide for your corresponding chapters as well. And good luck on your test, ladies.